Ray Allen, you're in Hardin?
Hardin County.
Okay.
Elizabethtown, Glendale.
How many acres is the farm?
We're row cropping about 3,500 acres of corn and soybeans, still raise some burley tobacco. Got a 150 head of black cattle, Angus cattle.
Mm-hmm.
That's about our enterprises right now. So 3,500 acres of row crop and a total of 4,000 acres of ground.
Okay, so you're on the board, correct?
I'm on Kentucky's Farm Bureau board, yes, state board.
And the is there a crops committee? I forget how the titles go.
You know, that committee was changed a couple years ago with Grain Crops Committee, and I'm the vice chair of that.
Okay.
Yes.
So let's... How many crops have you had? How many more than 20? What's your career up to now?
Okay, that's a good question. I'm probably 45 or so.
Okay.
Crops total.
So yeah. I talked to Jed and Caleb, as a matter of fact, 2 weeks ago, and I asked this question because it was shared with me that back when corn was less than $2, and soybeans were less than $6. They were making more money at less than two and less than six than they are today because of the input price and how much it costs to farm.
Sure.
So
how do we keep this up? On our farm, the only way we've been able to keep it up is continuing to invest in new technology, better use of our inputs, and any input that we can put in our toolbox that the suppliers will sell us as it comes to fertilizer, seed treatments, chemicals, crop protectants, anything that we can use to increase or improve yields and quality, we've done. And I noted a few years ago that the only way we keep this up is continuing to invest, and we have to achieve that 200 bushel average in order to make ends meet. And the only way to do that is to continue to invest in the things that make yield. So today, here we are. We're dependent on higher and higher input cost to produce yield. And we're doing that to cover our so-called expenses and overhead. And we're on this little wheel that you see the mouse or the chipmunk on. And the only way to stay in the game is to continue to feed the mouse. Okay, we've got to continue to add those inputs that make yield. We have to invest in equipment and infrastructure to store our grain and try to find labor to get the work done. I think more and more farms are trying to be self-sufficient. Their family's doing the labor, but we have to continue to feed that mouse to have yield so that we have enough product to sell to cover our expenses.
I remember going. I don't remember. We had a board meeting. It was Reno. It was one of those gambling towns.
Okay.
And they had us staying at a gambling hotel. And I didn't gamble. But I noted there was like a $5 blackjack table, and there was a $50 table, and $100, and there was a $500 blackjack. I mean, you could play at whatever level of risk. As a farmer, you don't have a choice. You're playing at a higher table. You've been playing at a higher table all along, and you still are.
All along. Now, yes, back when corn was $2 and beans were $5 and $6, it was easier because, you know, the scale of the credit and inputs that we needed wasn't as large. You could invest in everything you needed for a crop probably for less than $200 an acre, and you can't begin to put out a crop for that these days. You just have to be ready to manage the capital needs. You know, I had a farm management class at UK, advanced farm management, I think it was called. And Dr. Chris Wall's favorite saying was for us to remember was, the secret to success in farming will be managing the magnitudes. And Jeff, this was in late 1970s. But his word was, farmers tomorrow will have to learn how to manage the magnitudes. Did we even have any idea then what he was talking about? No, but we know now. We know the size and scale that takes.
So put that into perspective for me, managing the magnitudes to your cropping 20 years ago to your cropping today, managing the magnitudes.
Well, we're probably trying to grow 10 times the amount of crop acres-wise to support the same family lifestyle and number of families. Okay. We're growing 10 times the acres. Our investment in equipment is, put that in real sense. A combine then might have been $20,000. Now they're $850,000. So, you know, I don't know the scale of that, but it's large. And the investment in a crop probably has gone from $200 an acre, $150 an acre. And now we're talking about, outlays of $800 to $900 per acre to put out a corn crop.
Just to put it out.
Just to put it out and hope that weather cooperates and the labor comes along to get it in the bin. And then we, hopefully we've already done some marketing before that happens, but hope that the market will bear the supply that comes at a price that will return a profit.
I want to say a name I know you know, Darren Luttrell. I was talking to him earlier this year when they finally got in the field, and I asked him how he was doing, and he said, we're planting about 50 acres an hour. And I looked back and I thought, well, gee, Dad and I's best day with a 4-row planter, our best day was 54 acres in a day. He's doing it in an hour, but then I took it a step further. If you say that he's spending $1,000 an acre,
yes,
then as a farmer, he's putting $50,000 in the ground every hour and hoping that Mother Nature cooperates.
Yes. So we have to know our P's and Q's. We have to know our budgets, but more than that, we have to have a reliable source of capital that will hang with us and make that kind of investment and wait for a crop at the end.
So when you talk with other crop farmers, grain crop farmers in Kentucky, what would you say are your top issues? Is it exports? Is it inputs? What are the issues that Kentucky brings to the table that are your headwinds?
I think inputs is the biggest thing on the ticket list this year, because the prices have gone steadily grown over the last 3 to 4 years, and now we're at a higher level for inputs than we ever have. The price of grain over the last 3 to 4 years has probably not changed. It's kind of flat. So nobody's really, you know, saying, well, we're getting less for a crop than we did last year. No, we're probably not getting any less per bushel for crops year over year for the last few years. Yes, we had those heydays after the 2020 when supplies got scarce because of something that was going around the world. And we had some very lucrative returns on crops then because of higher prices. But since then, prices have leveled out here in this flat line, but inputs have continued to escalate. And the thing on most folks' mind is the cost of our inputs, and that we have no alternatives to buy what we need, and more and more we have no alternatives to shop. We're down to 3 to 4 players in any input that we need, whether it be chemical, seed, fertilizer, machinery. You look it over. I think we're down to 3 to 4 major players in any one of those markets. So there's just no competition. There's no easy inroad to get to a new product or a different source to lessen the cost of putting that crop out.
So with 3,500 acres, I mean, the folks in California that are planting by hand and harvesting by hand and those folks that are, and tobacco, but that
sure.
you just don't automate tobacco. You've got to have manual labor. But on your cropping operation, are you at a point that autonomy and AI can help you offset labor costs or help you to expand to meet your margins?
I have begun to wonder about that. I'm not on that first adopter page. Okay. I'm not that. I'm probably not the innovator, but I'm not the first adopter. But yes, this summer, the year that we've had, the struggles we've had of getting the crop out and finding the labor to do it. If timing is everything when it gets to getting a crop in the field. I've begun to wonder how much autonomy would help in a farming operation. But then we'd have to weigh that with the cost and the investment in infrastructure to get that done. It's possible. And of course, they tell us, technology is going to come at us faster than we can perceive now anyway. So yes, it could very well be here in Kentucky Farms, on a, you know, production scale model in less than 10 years. Will it be on my farm? I can't say today.
Yeah. Quint Pottinger, I really enjoyed a conversation with him.
I've seen some of his stuff.
You know, and he talked about, you know, he said he stress tested his farm. looking at his machinery costs, looking at his labor, looking at the other. He said, we did a stress test and realized that we couldn't sustain where we were. So he adopted and is looking at autonomy.
Yeah.
And he's got an average acres average 22 on his operation. Only 22 acres.
22.
Now, if you're up in Illinois and Iowa when you've got 100-acre-plus fields, okay. But in his case, he said the element, their average 22 acres, and they have to be connected. But he said, we found that the planter, it could run 24 hours. You know, and instead of his limitation or having other employees to do, he could set the machine, turn it loose.
So even in the area that you think it would not work or not be beneficial, he's making it work, and he's probably gaining some things by efficiency of size of fields and not having that tied up labor in small fields. He's multiplying his efficiency by doing autonomy.
So I just found it really interesting,
yes.
And that's kind of a sidebar as
that's
our confirmation,
right. Yes.
Conversation, but I thought it was interesting. So, and I don't want to peer into anybody's books, but I know that it's not been easy. And I know in Washington, they're talking about now a bridge assistance, to help, crop farmers, especially
sure.
Soybeans, but crop farmers from now until the new reference prices and new elements of HR1 kick in.
It seems like all of our programs are always a season short and at a reduced rate that it would actually take to make things work out. But those payments will always be welcomed. Farmers generally don't like to live out of the mailbox. They like to live off the land and what they can do with the land. So yes, any kind of bridge will be welcomed, will be very well used. I'm going to predict that every crop farmer has some inputs for this year's crop that are not yet paid for or will need to be paid before the end of the year for the crop that is already produced and in the bin. I'm satisfied that the majority of those acres will have outstanding debts at the end of December. So any payment that comes will reward the farmer and he can in turn reward his supplier and get a place to start next year. That's what we all live for, is live another day, grow another crop, try to put the things of nature and God's provision in the land in our what meager labor that we can put together to grow a crop.
So I'm going to completely turn the wheel on you here. I've been broadcasting for 43 years, and one of the first leaders that I had a chance to talk to was Ray Mackey.
All right. How about that?
He was so kind to me, and he was so strong as a leader, and he was willing to take time to explain and to educate, and I was so grateful for that.
Wonderful.
You watched your father as president of Kentucky Farm Bureau, so I'd have to believe you might be a little biased when you hear him talking about it.
That's right.
But now that you are an adult, and now that you are running the farming operation, now you are his legacy. What is Farm Bureau? And do you hold it as dear as he held it?
Now, I've never put myself in the same camp as my father, first of all.
I am.
When it comes to leadership or abilities or just inherent talents, he certainly had a talent for leadership and a way to moderate the room to achieve an outcome, whether it be a decision or a policy making or things like that. How do I see Farm Bureau and the way it is today? I think that was part of your question.
Yeah.
And do I hold it as dear? Yes, I hold it as dear. I don't pretend to be quite the leader that he was, because he certainly had a feel for the room. Okay. Let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. But Farm Bureau, ever more important in advocacy and relaying the position of farmers and expressing the needs that we have and pointing out the areas where regulation or non-competition or lack of markets or the ability to navigate markets. I can remember my father helping navigate those markets that were closed. Let's talk about tobacco, and let's talk about corn that needed to go overseas, but it, for some reason it didn't meet the qualifications. I can remember those aspects about his leadership. But today, those things of access to markets and how we navigate what comes down from Washington, ever more important. That Farm Bureau is the voice that gets the word out there, carries the message for those on-the-ground farmers like myself. And my heart is on the ground, okay? Yes, I love leadership. I feel led to it, somewhat because of my dad's legacy, but also somewhat because of the things that I have seen leadership and Farm Bureau, an organization like Farm Bureau, can do. I feel led to. But my heart is on the ground. And the way that those folks on the ground, like myself, have a voice is through an organization like Kentucky Farm Bureau. And gosh, look at the way that we've, over the years, staff and the ability and their presence has improved and become widely known, world known, or at least in our world as from here to Washington and back, how much more effective the staff from Kentucky Farm Bureau and the organization and the divisions of can speak for those folks on the ground like myself.
I think it's easy to see, and I recall from your dad's day, grain elevator bankruptcy. We were able, I mean, working through that.
Yes.
We were working through problems,
yeah.
Working through problems, and you still work through problems for farmers. But I don't think Farm Bureau gets credit, even in your policy session at your annual meeting. Yes, you concentrate on agriculture, but you're probably more focused on rural issues.
Yeah.
Not just the farmer, but all of the voice for rural Kentucky. And that's education and development and the rest.
Yeah. All those little things that have to go on in a community like schools and roads and services and local governments, all those things, Farm Bureau has a part in, and you'll find Farm Bureau leaders, Farm Bureau members in those spots speaking up. But Farm Bureau has always taken care of those suppliers, those door-to-door business folks, those storefronts on Main Street that keep the town going. Farm Bureau has always been an advocate for those folks too, just like those folks who, like me, are on the dirt doing the farm work.
Here's the last one. Have you seen young people in your lifetime that got involved in Farm Bureau? Maybe they were in a youth contest, or maybe they got a scholarship, or maybe they were in the Young Farmers. Have you seen a young person flourish and become an asset for Farm Bureau?
Yes, certainly. Seen those folks that just barely could get up in front of a crowd and give a 2-minute speech, but come back and do it again, or go to another convention or another meeting or another conference and gain a little more confidence in themselves, get some encouragement from leaders. And first thing you know, they're chairing committees. First thing you know, they're hosting events on their farm. First thing you know, they're becoming an officer in a local organization and doing things for Farm Bureau. Now, I want to add one note to that. The economy of agriculture is very important worldwide. But it's also important in those small town areas where those young leaders come from, because I do have a long history, as you said, and your history too. But I have seen times when there was a drought of young leaders becoming involved and staying because of the tough economic times on the family farm or on the local farms. And I've seen times of flourishment. As you know, when you just out of the woodwork came young people ready to participate in contest or participate in discussions because they wanted to be a part of this thing called farming and agriculture, because the economy provided for it, or it was not say lucrative, but it was rewarding. And then now we seem to be in one of those drought times again. So, you know, I fear that we can't sustain this drought very long, or we'll lose out on another possible generation of leaders, which we've enjoyed sometimes of leaders coming out of that young set because of their economies on their farm.
Well, I believe back in the 80s, we lost a generation of farmers.
Definitely.
I'm one of them.
Definitely.
I would have been the sixth generation and didn't survive it.
And if I hadn't been at the University of Kentucky for 7 years doing a one semester at a time education with the only focus of I'm going to get back to the farm in 1979, and then I did endure the 80s because I thought that is the only thing I'm going to do. I am going to come home and farm. And we did that. We stayed through those times on the farm, but not everybody was able to. And it just wasn't there for them. Tough days. And as I said, I fear that we're kind of in one of those cycles again. What does that say? Cycles come and go. But there's cost involved.